Hi everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 159. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 3 episodes 5 Homecoming and 6 Band Candy. As usual, you can reach us through email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable, this post on hypeable.com, or any of our other Buffy-centric posts. Recently, we put up a Season 2 quiz that's really fun, and you should go check that out. And you can always reach us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm your host today. My name is Karen, and I am joined by Caitlin, Kristen, and Danielle. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
I feel kind of guilty for being, like, extra excited about Danielle being here, but
it's been fine. So long. It's okay.
It's been so long. So that's really cool. Okay, let's kick off with some fun facts. I'm going to go first so that Caitlin doesn't steal mine. I don't know if you realized, but a year ago today, Caitlin visited me when I lived in North Carolina. I saw on Facebook, so.
Oh, was that a year ago? I didn't realize.
It was exciting. And I saw her picture that was, it was a ridiculous picture, but it was super cute, and our hair was amazing, so.
And we had fun.
We did. We had lots of fun. Okay, would you like to go next, Caitlin?
Sure. So my not so fun fact last week was that I was grading, and my fun fact this week is I'm done. I turned in my grades last night.
Yay.
So woohoo!
We get the fun fact.
Yeah. Only the best for you guys.
We deserve it. Danielle, what's your fun fact?
Well, I guess my fun fact is that I get to see Karen in about 10 days in person.
Yeah.
Jealous. I want to see Danielle, not Karen. I see Karen all the time.
Like, you live with her. What are you talking about?
I'm jealous because Karen gets to see Danielle, and I want to see people. I mean, I love Karen.
But she's not Danielle.
No. I want to see you, too. I want to come visit soon.
Okay. And Kristen, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact can be that my room is finally starting to feel like a room and not just a place where I store things. Like yesterday, I spent quite a bit of time trying to get things out of boxes and boxes out of my room. So slowly but surely, it's becoming home rather than just, you know, that storage unit thing that I sleep in.
My fun fact should have been that I finally put out all my Funkos. And
yes.
They're glorious. And I have a... I have a Civil War shelf, basically, where I put all the Marvel Funkos that are from, like, not necessarily from Civil War, but all the Team Cap, Team Iron Man, like, pitted against each other. I have 3 Steves, but I have 5 Iron Mans, so, you know.
I was going to say, it's funny. It's like 3 Steves, a Falcon, versus, like, this host of Iron Man characters and Hulkbuster. It's funny. It's cute.
It's a little one-sided, but what can I say? Alright, let's jump right into the episode. This is episode 5, Homecoming, and this synopsis is brought to you by Mitch, I believe. In this episode, that whole The Slayer Hunger Games thing that we predicted actually came true. While Buffy finds herself obsessed with beating Cordelia at becoming the Homecoming Queen, Trick and some alien friends decide to murder both Slayers at once. But see, what they don't realize is that every time you kill the Avatar, another will just crop up, and then you have to find the new one. Anyway, Buffy kills all of the hunters, save for that one sassy cowboy vamp and Trick. Meanwhile, Willow and Xander cheat on their significant others. Yeah. That is a thing that happens.
Yep.
We're just gonna get there momentarily. First of all, how do you guys feel about Buffy the Homecoming Queen? Because we know that in Buffy's past, this was sort of her thing. She was a cheerleader, and she was all these, like, queens and crowned at all these different festivals and stuff, and the Buffy that we know just doesn't really have time for that sort of thing. So to see her in this different role, I wanted to know if it was jarring, or if you guys could really see that this is how she used to be. Kristen, why don't you go first?
I mean, we've had a lot of Buffy, like, trying to get across to people that she just wants to be normal. And I can totally see where her choosing to campaign for prom or for homecoming queen and, like, go up against Cordy, like, it's a dose of normal for her. Like, it's, you know, it's what girls do in high school. So I can totally see how it fits into her character. It did seem a little bit petty. Like, she kind of pulled it out of nowhere and was like, I'm going to be homecoming queen. And I was like, okay, sure, Buffy, you can, yeah, okay. So, you know, as much as I kind of thought it was kind of something beneath her, like, she doesn't really need it, I could totally see why she wanted it. And I could totally see why it was, like, a thing that she needed to do.
Danielle, how did you feel about it?
I know they keep saying that this is how she was previously, but it just feels like there's some weird disconnect. I don't know if it's because we didn't see the trajectory from her being prom queen material and then going to who she is now, or if there's just something that's just not clicking for me, but they can say all they want that, like, this is how Buffy used to be. This was her previous normal, but it just doesn't connect for me. So it did feel a little strange for me to see her try to do this.
Yeah, Caitlin, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I always feel like this is a regression for Buffy. Like Kristen said, she gets really petty. And even though I think that this is part of her personality, like, she is a girly girl and she wants these nice things and she wants to be normal. But at the same time, she's kind of gone beyond that and she has all of these responsibilities now as the Slayer that whenever she gets to this point, it feels like, I don't know, taking one step back. And I don't really like her that much when she's like this.
I like her a lot in this episode. So I like this a lot. And it'll kind of be like, this is why my favorite line is my favorite line. But it basically explains why she's doing what she's doing. Because we have to remember she is coming off of having run away and spent the summer away and then having to fight to get back into the school, having to really have this big, massive confrontation with her friends and all these people, like, coming to her welcome back party, quote unquote, that, like, had no idea who she was. And so she really is reminded very starkly of how much she does not fit in this school. And so it's something for her. And then it kind of plays off of the fact that Cordelia didn't tell her about the yearbook picture. So she's really trying to find this sense of belonging and doing something a little over the top, maybe, but that was in her old wheelhouse, is a way for her, I think, to try to find a sense of belonging. And that makes so much sense for her, considering where she is in her story. So it works really well for me.
Yeah, that's true. So, anybody here, would you guys vote for Cordelia over Buffy?
I mean, depends on what was in the fruit basket.
I don't know, those cupcakes looked really good, though.
I was going to say, and the quality of, like, the cupcakes or muffins or whatever.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know. I mean, Cordy's probably better known around the school, so if I was just a random Joe Schmo, I probably would consider voting for Cordelia. Although we don't know the other two girls, so who knows? Maybe I'd like them better.
Apparently the other classmates did.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess if I was a random Joe Schmo, I probably would vote for Cordelia, just because, like, who's this weird girl Buffy? But if that was me, I would probably vote for Buffy, because it's Buffy.
I mean, they probably know who she is, but they're like that weird girl who always has weapons in her bag.
She dropped a steak on the floor in front of me once. Like, oh, that girl. Yeah. Kind of weird.
I saw her beating up football players that one time.
Okay. God, I don't want to talk about this next part, but we have to. Okay. I don't want to say this is the crux of the episode, because obviously the crux of the episode is the Slayer games. But a huge part of this episode is Xander and Willow. And we find out that they kind of start having feelings for each other, or they start, at the very least, lusting after each other. And it has a lot to do with formal wear. But they overcompensate and they really try to help out Cordelia with her Homecoming Queen campaign and kind of leave Buffy in the dust. And that's a whole other dynamic that is confusing to Buffy and kind of, you know, motivates her to do things herself in her way, which is actually kind of nice. And I like seeing Willow working with Cordelia, even though she's clearly doing it out of guilt. But, oh man, this complicates things. Kristen, I want to start with you, because I know throughout the entire episode you were not too happy.
No, not at all. And it's kind of sad, because if this had happened in season one or like early on in season two before Oz and Cordelia were in the picture, I probably would have been a lot more game for it, just because, Xander and Willow definitely have like some chemistry. They have a little bit of tension, like it works. But Oz, I love Oz so much, and I love Cordelia with Xander so much that it feels so wrong. I'm like, what are you two doing? And I'm watching this scene in their formal wear, and like they're like getting closer and getting closer, and I didn't say anything. Like, I'm holding my breath, like, no, they're gonna figure out, like, it's gonna come to them that, like, no, we can't do this. Like, oh no, we can't cross that line. But no, they crossed the line, and I was like, what is even happening? Like, no, this is not okay. Like, Oz, hello, Willow, like, I was so mad. So after like the events of last episode, it seemed kind of out of character, especially for Willow, to drift like this, because she just spent an entire episode, you know, working on Oz's side and, you know, being with him through this whole is he a murderer thing. And she seemed so on his side that for them to kind of drift like this was, yeah, I was not on board.
And Danielle, I don't think I actually know how you feel about the dynamics of these four characters with each other. So why don't you go into that a little bit?
In general, Xander's a little on my shit list, but he's been getting better. So I will say that. I enjoyed, as Kristen was saying, I enjoyed their relationship in season two. And if this would have happened back then, it would have been a bit better. I don't like Xander's thing with Buffy, so I'm glad that's kind of fading. But this thing with Willow, it was just a really tough scene to sit through. It was almost as tough to sit through as that that Valentine's Day-ish like episode thing, the one that everybody hated and caused... Yeah, that one. It was almost as tough, like, this scene to sit through as that was, because I knew what was happening, but it was just... It felt gross. Whereas, like Chris was saying, if it would have happened a season previously, I would have been so much better with it. So I guess that's a testament to how much the characters have grown imperceptibly. I'm not sure, but that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Caitlin, how do you like this development?
On a reactionary level, I just cringe, because what are you doing? But like, on a storytelling level, it makes sense to me that it would take this long to get there, because neither of them were... So it makes sense, because neither of them were really, I feel like, in a place for the attraction to be mutual up until this point, because it seems to me that it's sort of a you want what you can't have, and they were always kind of available to each other up until now, when they're kind of realizing they're both in steady relationships, and then it's like, oh, I can't have this, and I've wanted it for a long time, and it sort of comes to the surface. So it's, I can see where it makes sense, but also, oh, it's so hard to watch.
Yeah. That's kind of where I stand. I have a really unpopular opinion, and actually so does Selena, that I found out, and that we both actually ship Willow and Xander together, despite what has happened, what is happening, what will happen. It's always sort of been a thing for me that I really liked. And I think it just goes back to season one, where Willow's pining after him and she sees past all of his crap and still ends up liking the person beneath. And I think upon this rewatch, it's changed for me a little bit, because obviously, I think like a lot of us are, we're seeing Xander in a different light. And so, in a not so great light. And so, I guess it's still... like, it's changing for me, but I still kind of like this. On the other hand, God, I love Oz. I love Oz so much. I love Willow and Oz together, and I feel terrible for him, and it's that guilt that Willow has is so intense, and yet, you know, she's had feelings for this guy for so long, and it's not that I don't blame her, I do, but I guess I kind of see it from Willow's point of view more than I see it from Xander's, because for Xander, this is all kind of new, and like you were saying, Caitlin, it's, you know, all of a sudden he can't have her, and okay, she's interesting now. It's the same thing that, like, Buffy was, like, even after he realized Buffy wasn't into him, would never be into him, he kept going after her because he couldn't have her. Cordelia was a lot of the same way until they ended up actually getting together. And so he clearly has a type and a pattern, and it's really unfortunate for the other two that all of a sudden he kind of, you know, figures this out. And I feel bad for Cordelia, too, especially in this episode, because she talks about how deep her feelings are for him, and I love the way that she just, it's sort of like she doesn't want to admit how much she cares for him, but at the same time, she just can't help it. And I think that's really cute for somebody like Cordelia, who's all about appearances, but can't help really caring about Xander, of all people. So, yeah, part of me, there's a little tiny part of me that does a little victory dance when this happens, because I can't help but still really like Willow and Xander's dynamic and the relationship that they had before and the feelings that Willow had for Xander. But a much larger part goes, no, but Oz, think of Oz.
He's just so Oz.
Pretty much full time.
Swoon.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. I'm really interested to know what the other newbies think about it, and our listeners, because, yeah, very, very unfortunate timing here. But we go into the Slayer games, and this is funny because in the last episode they were talking about pitting, you know, characters against each other and Slayers and all this kind of stuff and, like, who would win and everything, and this is a little bit different, but people are, you've got these characters who are hunting them down, and Trick set it up, and he gets the, he gets Gorge back, Sassy Cowboy, and his wife. There's a couple of Germans, there's German twins, and the spiny-headed guy, and the hunter guy, and they all go after who they think is Buffy and Faith, except it's Buffy and Cordelia, which I think is just a great little twist, and all of a sudden, you know, they really do have to bond, so that was pretty good. But Danielle, what did you think of this whole plot point with the Slayer Fest?
That was hilarious. I wasn't sure what was going on at the beginning, like what they were doing. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, but then once they got to the forest with the TV, I was like, oh, this is what's happening. And I liked seeing Cordelia not shut down, because that's one of the things I think I've been anticipating for a while, that like this isn't the life for her. So at one point she's going to get so scared and just shut down. But I think at this point I'm over that, because she proved in this episode that she can hold her own even when she's scared and out of her depth. So I think I enjoyed seeing that a little bit more than the bonding, although the bonding was pretty great.
Yeah. And I just love how everything is done in formal wear. Like, there's explosions. Yeah. They're diving out of the way. By the time they get to the homecoming, they are covered in dirt. And I think one of them might be Buffy. Like, her dress is falling apart, and it was great. Kristen, how did you like the games?
The Slayer games themselves were ridiculous and amazing, and like, I loved all of the different people who were like hunting her. Like, you had like bear trap guy and lizard guy, and then you had the you know, Texas duo, and like, it was good. It was good times. So yeah, I really liked watching Cordy and Buffy kind of haphazardly end up together and having to work together. It was good fun.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but I just love Trick, too. Like, he's so charismatic, and I love the way that he's like, the spiny head looking dude, and he just
I love Trick.
I know, right? Like, and actually Mitch does make a good point here. Trick is like this season's Spike, and you know, both of them get out of there when they don't think they're going to be able to survive the situation. And I love that about these characters, because in so many movies and television shows, you get the dumb bad guy who, you know, is like, I'm going to kill you, and even though you've killed 300 of, you know, my cronies, I'm going to be the one that's different. I'm going to end up killing you. And it never works out that way. But these guys are smart, and they get out of there when they can. And I don't think, it doesn't make them seem cowardly in this situation. They're not running away. They're just being smarter. And I think that's such an interesting thing to do with a bad guy.
Well, I don't think they would have survived for a long time if they didn't know when to get out and when to actually fight.
Yeah, definitely. Caitlin, how do you like Slayer Fest?
My God, this is one of my favorites. I rewatch this one a lot. It's just the dynamics between Buffy and Cordelia are unexpected but welcome, and you see Cordelia kind of stepping up. First she's like, do not involve me in this, and then she has the spatula, which is the greatest thing ever. And then she ends up like driving the last vampire away just with her words. Like, Xander would appreciate that, I think. So I just love the whole thing, and I love the way they really come to an understanding with each other, and then through this like crazy ridiculous experience. And then of course I love like the modem and like the flip phones. You're like, look how high tech we are. And in 2016 we're like, oh, you're so cute.
Kristen was flipping out over that part. She got like nostalgic. She's like, look at the flip phone.
And the, oh my gosh, look at the wireless modem, like, whoa. Like, it was so, you could tell it was, like, supposed to be impressive, and now it, looking back at it, it's like, aww, look at the old technology.
Look at you, Fox.
Yeah.
Props to you, Caitlin, though, for rewatching this episode a lot. I really like the Slayer Fest parts, and even though, you know, my feelings about Willow and Xander and all of, and Oz and all of that, like, I think this episode is really hard for me to rewatch because it makes me uncomfortable. Like, I like it and I don't like it at the same time, and I never quite know how I feel, really, and I'm happy and I'm sad all at the same time, and it's just very confusing emotionally for me. But that being said, anyone else have anything for this episode before we move into scenes and lines?
Scott breaks up with Buffy.
I mean,
yeah, oh yeah,
there is that.
That was a face.
Did you guys, were you guys happy? Were you guys relieved? Or were you sad? Do you like Scott?
God, he's so boring. Like, when he, his breaking up with her is about as excited as he is when he's just, like, hanging out with her. Like, he's so monotone in voice and personality that I was just kind of like, okay, bye-bye. You added nothing.
Yeah, while we were watching this, I kept comparing him to the rando guy that Vampire Diaries set Elena up with when she went to college. Like, they look almost identical. It's scary how much this Scott guy, the actor, and the actor that played Elena's guy were, like, the same. Because they play the same role. Like, they're just this rando person kind of outside of everything that they stick in to kind of, you know, merge the whole world. Like, it's to give her a little something different, and she's, you know, she's meeting new people and she's trying to move past all of the crazy from last season. And yeah, it's just, it was a really weird relationship. It didn't really seem to work, and yeah, so I wasn't really heartbroken when he broke up with her, but I felt bad for her. So
yeah, we talked about how his name is like Hope, so it's like, oh, he represents hope, and then it's like Hope Dashed, womp womp.
Yeah, that is true. And to be fair, Buffy has a lot on her mind right now, not only with what comes next in the episode, but with Angel being back and all this stuff happening. And actually, since we're here, and since Kristen, you weren't on last week, and Danielle, we don't get to hear from you that often, I'd like to know especially how you guys feel about that revelation and about him coming back.
I think if I were watching it in the moment, I would have been very surprised. But considering the fact that my mom, for some reason, is a really big Angel fan. Like, I was watching these episodes yesterday, and she caught a glimpse of, like, Angel doing, I don't know what it was. It was a thing in the courtyard. He looked all serene or whatever. And she walks in my room. Yeah. Yes, that's it. She walks in her room, and she goes, oh my God, are you watching Angel? I'm like, no, Mom. So because I knew that Angel was a thing that even my mom picked up on, I knew he was going to come back. And I think because I don't fully understand the circumstances about his return, that I don't have much of an opinion on it right now. I'd like to know, like, the why and the how. And then once I get that, I think would be, like, surprise or more of an emotion. But right now it's just kind of like, yes, that was inevitable and I was expecting it.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, it seems too good to be true that he just kind of came back and he spent an episode being all, like, feral and weird, but now he seems to be back to normal Angel, so I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop and for something horrible to happen or, you know, whatever, because it can't just be that easy. So, yeah, like, I'm just anxious to see what comes next and how he returned and to kind of learn more about all that.
You say feral and weird, I say sweaty and gorgeous.
I mean, the Tai Chi was nice. Like, he can do Tai Chi all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still really weak, just to keep that in mind. He's hardly up to full strength at this point.
God, if he's weak at this point, I'm, like, dead. Because he looked a little muscularly and strong to me, but that's okay.
Okay, let's jump into favorite scenes and lines then. My favorite scene was the way that Cordy talks her way out of Gorch attacking her, just because, damn, it is so good. I mean, Cordy runs away a lot, and you can't blame her for that. She's not a slayer, she's not used to fighting. This is all very new to her. It's just the way it is. It's smart for her to do that, and she didn't do that. She stood right up to that guy, she was pissed, and she talked her way out of it, and it was just such a great scene for her, and I loved it, and I loved how he was like, yeah, see you later. So funny. Kristen, you have a Cordy scene, too.
Yes, mine was Cordy hitting the spiny head guy with the spatula. She was so, like... She thought she was helping. Like, she really thought she was doing damage. She's just, like, smacking him with it. It was hilarious. And then, like, the whole Buffy, you know, telling her, like, Cordy, gun! And she goes and grabs the gun and misses entirely. And then she's like, Cordy, spatula! And I'm like, yeah, just let her do her thing with the spatula. It's totally badass.
And then the wood vampire actually gets killed with the spatula.
Yeah!
Okay. The wooden handle. Love it.
It was great. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
So mine was at the homecoming dance when Faith honors the girl code and is pissed off at Scott, so goes and is like, you know, hi, honey. You know, the doctor says all the tingling and all that will clear up real soon to, like, scare off the girl he went to the dance with. So Faith looking out for her girl, loved it.
I forgot, like, I think I've wiped Faith from my memory. Like, obviously I knew she was in here, but I think in my mind she's a completely different person than she actually is. So I'm kind of watching this for the first time again, her little arc, and I'm, like, really into it because I forgot she did that for Buffy, and I'm like, that's amazing. Like, she is helping her, and considering how they started and how much their personalities clash, it's really nice to see her standing up for Buffy and getting a little bit of revenge on her behalf.
She's so offended on Buffy's behalf seeing Scott, which is just amazing.
Yeah. And Danielle, what was yours?
I really liked that montage that they had at some point where it was like how Cordy was campaigning and how Buffy was campaigning, and then you just get the weird vampire scenes thrown in to the montage where they're, like, sitting around and rolling around on couches and just, like, doing whatever. It was a very weird juxtaposition of ideas, but I liked it for its weirdness.
I mean, they're both preparing for battle,
That's pretty much Buffy in a nutshell. Like, I liked it for its weirdness.
That's true, actually. Okay, favorite lines. Mine comes from Giles at Homecoming, and he's talking to Willow and Xander, and he goes, "We have to find Buffy. Something terrible has happened." Just kidding. Thought I'd give you a scare. And it's like, Giles, your idea of jokes.
And then he gets excited about finger sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Giles is me and I am Giles.
I love him so much. He's so awkward, but it's just, it works. And he thinks he's hilarious. And of course, Will and Xander have a lot of other things on their mind right now, but they're just not impressed. But he is. He laughed at his own joke, and it was glorious.
King of the dad jokes.
Oh, God. That is true. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from Oz, and in pure Oz fashion, like, Willow kind of says that she's with Cordy, and rather than being like, I'm with her, he says, as Willow goes, so goes my nation. It's just so beautifully Oz and weird and adorable, and I love him.
It's lines like this that kill me, because you know what happened between Willow and Xander, and you're like, but Oz. Caitlin, what was your favorite line / monologue?
Yeah, so it's kind of long, but I felt like it's just, this is where they're in the cabin and Cordelia is just like asking Buffy, why are you so obsessed with becoming homecoming queen? Like, this is my thing, not your thing. And Buffy says, because this is all I do. This is what my life is. You couldn't understand. I just thought, homecoming queen. I could pick up a yearbook someday and say, I was there. I went to high school. I had friends. And for one moment, I got to live in the world. And there'd be proof. Proof that I was chosen for something other than this. Besides, and then she cocks the gun. I look cute in a tiara.
The gun.
So I love the ending. I love the ending, but then I also just kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, like why she was so obsessed in this. I think this is such a telling little speech she gives, because it's really not that she's just going crazy. Like, she's really trying to pick up the pieces of her life.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it's so hard because I completely understand where you're coming from and why this is great. And I understand where she's coming from and why she feels this way. But it's that petty Buffy that, like, I just want her to keep rising above. And, like, I understand why she doesn't. She's still in high school. Like, she wants all of these things that are normal. And the rest of her life is completely stressful. So I get it. But at the same time, I want her to be better than that. So it still grates on me, even though I still like it, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like, she should act like this all the time, but I understand and empathize with why she acts this way. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. And Danielle, what was your favorite line?
My favorite line was from that kid, Jonathan, and he just goes, Cordelia gave me $6. That buys a whole lot of cupcakes. And I felt like I could really relate to him in that moment, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all can relate to him a little in that moment.
I mean, cupcakes.
Right?
Cupcakes, yeah. Man.
Also, when he was at the party with, like, the dip, like, yeah. I find him very relatable.
All right, let's jump into episode 6, Band Candy. Not gonna lie, I forgot what this episode was about, and the second I figured it out, I completely freaked out.
Yeah, like, she stood up and, like, threw her arms in the air and started giggling, and I was like, what is happening over there? And she's like, nothing, I just remembered what this episode's about, and I'm like, oh, okay. It was very, very funny.
And it was before, like, it was in a completely, like, nonsensical scene. Like, nothing important had just happened. It just came to me all of a sudden what this episode was about, and I flipped. But let's jump right into the synopsis for episode 6, Band Candy. In this episode, Giles rolls up his sleeves and gets busy with Joyce. When Ethan rolls into town selling magical teenage-ifying candy, the town goes haywire and loses all order. Naturally, this all leads to a baby sacrifice for a giant CGI demon worm. Buffy burns the basilisk, but Trick escapes before she can stake him. In a denouement of epic sexual Tenzin, Giles and Joyce realize that they did the nasty.
Sexual Tenzin!
Avatar reference.
Oh.
It's okay. It went over my head too, Danielle. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good.
So my first question is for the newbies. As soon as the candy was introduced, did you smell something funny?
The answer is yes. I knew something was up. They don't, like, first of all, if the band needs new uniforms, then the band sells candy, not the entire school. So the fact that the entire school was told to sell candy to raise new money for band uniforms, like, I was like, no, there's something going on. So, yeah, my flag was raised the second that entered the fray. I was like, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Danielle, what about you?
See, I was thinking the same thing, but it didn't send up a flag for me. I think part of the reason why is because when I saw the episode title before I started watching it, I read band candy, like man candy. So I thought it was going to be about like a hot singer guitarist guy. So when they started talking about the marching band, which I love marching band, don't get me wrong. But when they started talking about that, I didn't connect that band to the titles band. I was just looking for a hot singer instead. And that's where my flag would have gone up. So it didn't.
Caitlin, I know we've talked before about rewatching some of these old episodes and not necessarily remembering what happens in them and kind of being surprised all over again as we watch. So did you forget like I did, or did you remember right from the beginning?
Oh, I remembered, and I was very excited. I saw which pair this was, and I was like, yes! I get such enjoyment from both of these episodes.
So, at the beginning of this episode, we also meet the mayor, and we kind of get a good look at what he's like. And I don't know about you guys, Caitlin, you can weigh in on this, but I kind of get a Damien Dark vibe from him. Well, I feel like they're both really charismatic, and it makes you want to like them, but at the same time, you kind of know that something's off. Plus, he's got, you know, all of his idols in his cabinet, and clearly he's praying to demons just like Damien Dark does, and they're both in a position of power, and it just, I don't know, I see some parallels.
I don't necessarily see it, but okay.
Okay, maybe it's just me then.
And he just wants you to wash your hands.
Oh my god. Yeah, I still don't understand all that happened in that scene. I was like, what is going on? Like, he's so weird. And yeah, that's basically my opinion of the mayor. He's just weird.
It's just the hands thing. Like, I like to advocate for people washing their hands. That's all fine and great. But it was a weird... I know what they were going for. Like, they were going for, like, an intimidating person who can be intimidating over something as simple as washing your hands. And I think that would have worked better for me, like, the intimidation, if it was something other than, like, you need to wash your hands and scrub under your fingernails. Like, it just, it felt strange.
Oh, that's the impression you got. That's interesting.
Like,
okay.
I'm not explaining this well. I'm trying to think of another character where it's just like you get an impression of how scary they can be or of how much power they have by them enforcing something so small. And I think that the small thing that was chosen here was not what I was expecting and took me aback a little bit.
I mean, when I hear somebody saying you need to wash your hands, I just get the impression that they're a germaphobe. So, and I'm like, that's an interesting quirk to give this creepy guy who has an occult shrine in his office.
Oh, I didn't even think about it that way. Interesting. Okay.
See, I kind of see it like both ways. Like those things go hand in hand because... On the one hand, yes, he's being very intimidating over something as simple as washing your hands. And if he can command that much attention over something like that, I mean, this guy that he was talking to was clearly shaking in his boots, then it's somebody that you have to pay attention to. But on the other hand, like, yeah, he's a germaphobe. This is, you know, maybe not a weakness for him, but it's something they decided to give him, and you kind of have to wonder why, you know, how is this going to play into the story? Is it important? Is it just a quirk to make you remember him? We don't know yet.
Well, he lost me, started sniffing the paper or whatever. Like, he just, like, it was so weird. That's why, for me, I just got this guy is a total weirdo, because it didn't matter what he was doing. It just didn't really measure up to what I thought he would be doing. So it's like, what is going on?
And as we said earlier, it's weird and I like it. That's Buffy in a nutshell.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, changing subjects a little bit, let's talk about the most important part of this episode, which was Teenage Giles.
Hey-o!
Danielle, how did you feel when we first met Teenage Giles? Were you like, okay, this is kind of weird, I'm not sure I like it, or were you like, yes, please?
He was a great, like, bad boy. Like, he wasn't really bad, but he had that aura, and that's what made me go, yes, please.
Caitlin, this is obviously another great look into Giles' backstory. So, overall, how do you feel about it?
Well, as they say, showing is better than telling, so we definitely get a much better sense of Teenage Giles, and I love it. I love everything about it, and it informs him in such an interesting way, because we knew that he knew he was going to be a watcher from a young age, so this is clearly his rebellion against this fate he really didn't want and ends up having anyway. But he sort of sticks with it with, like, the occult obsession, and I love getting this insight into him, and he's kind of hilarious at the same time, like, especially when Ethan comes in and he's not here for Ethan, and it's amazing.
Kristen, what about you? Did you like this? Did you expect this to happen? Was it a surprise, or were you kind of just waiting for it?
Well, I'm trying to recall exactly, like, when I first realized that's what was happening, like, when he started lighting a cigarette and Joyce pulls a bottle of Kahlua out of the corner, I was like, what are they doing? Like, and I think it took me a second, but once I started to think they're regressing, like, they're becoming teenagers, my first thought was, we do know that as a teenager, he was definitely rebellious and, like, he, you know, he was not the Giles we know and love. So then I got kind of excited because I just wanted to get a dose of it. Like, I wanted to know what rebellious Giles looks like, and in modern Giles's body is even better because it just made it all the funnier.
Yeah, and honestly, I always kind of expect him to be worse in this episode than he actually is, because we know who he was. We know that he was called Ripper, and we know that he's done some pretty terrible things in his past, and I guess it always kind of surprises me just a little bit that they decided to not necessarily show that side of him. I mean, clearly he's still rebellious, but he wasn't, you know, trying to summon any demons or anything in this episode.
That's true. Although I will say, the one thing I thought that was kind of strange was that all of the teens were relatively extreme in a way. Like, even though Giles was tame for being Teenage Giles, he still, like, smashed a window with a garbage can. And it seemed like all of the adults who were turning into teens, like, none of them were Willow-esque. They were all, I don't even know, like, Buffy but crazy, which I thought was interesting.
Well, the Willow-esque ones probably stayed at home and weren't out and about.
Oh, that's true. Okay, that makes sense. Didn't think it through.
And it also makes me wonder that whatever was in that chocolate, if that heightened the personalities of these people as teenagers, or if this really was just how they were. Because you're right, in comparison to Buffy and the others, like, they seem crazy. Like, you don't see Buffy and Xander and Willow going around doing these things all the time. You know, it does seem very extreme in comparison.
So our teens and our core little group have had to grow up a bit faster than a lot of teenagers do in having to save the world multiple times.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. All right, well, switching gears again, I want to ask you guys about Ethan, especially the newbies. Do you guys care about him as a villain? Do you keep wondering why he keeps coming back to Sunnydale? Because I love Ethan, to be perfectly honest. I think he's a great villain, and his ploys are always very clever. But Danielle, why don't you weigh in?
In all honesty, I had no idea who that was until I saw the recognition on Giles's face. Like, it did not connect that we had seen this person before until that moment. And even then, I had to think about, like, wait, who is this? Why do they know him? So I guess with that, I'm very apathetic about the character. Like, he doesn't do a lot for me because he does not stick in my mind at all.
Okay. Kristen, what about you?
I recognized him just because the whole Halloween episode with the costumes kind of did stick for me enough that I recognized him and was like, oh God, Ethan's back. And with Teenage Giles, I was like, uh-oh, this is going to be really ridiculous. Like, I was really nervous to, like, see how Teenage Giles dealt with Ethan. So, yeah, I recognized him and I knew he was up to no good.
And what about you, Caitlin?
I like Ethan. He's an interesting counterpoint to a lot of the, like, villains that we get who are actual supernatural entities that are vampires and other types of monsters. Like, he's a dude. But he finds a way to be really dangerous as just a human being, which I think is a nice contrast from what we see with a lot of the other things they face.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I like him, is because he is human and he's normal and he's just clever. Like, he doesn't have to rely on intimidation or his physical strength. It all has to do with these little tricks that he has, you know? And I think that it's interesting that he's very much like Trick and Spike, because he makes sure that whatever happens, he goes on surviving. He's not all about fighting to the death. He's about fighting to win. And if he doesn't think he's going to win, then he's not going to bother fighting. And I just think that's interesting for a villain in particular. And, you know, just his past with Giles makes him interesting in my book. And, you know, whether or not he shows up again, I would always, always love to see him come back. But let's talk a little bit more about some of the other adults that we see turn into teenagers in this episode. Caitlin, you have a particular fondness for Snyder in this episode.
Oh, he's the greatest thing ever. He's just, my favorite scene was anything with him, because he's just, it's so unexpected that the uptight, smarmy principal who is out to get them is, like, the most ridiculous, needy, nerdy, like, dorky teenager that no one would ever hang out with, is the best. And he just, like, clings on to them, and it's so great, and it gives them a complete new perspective on him. And I love it. He's so ridiculous.
Danielle, did you like seeing this different side to Snyder?
I think I'm in the same boat as Caitlin. It was just, he was like almost like a suck up, sort of, but in an obnoxious, like also obnoxious. It was very not what I was expecting, especially since he's so tight laced and man of few words at some point. Like, I don't know, it was just a very interesting contrast that makes me wonder how he got to where he got, if this is true to how he was as a teen.
I just kept thinking he's basically the Peter Pettigrew of the group. Like, nobody really wants him there. They don't necessarily like him all that much, but they just basically let him follow them around.
Yeah, he's the joiner. He's the guy who wants to tag along and be a part of the group and don't leave without me, guys. And it was, yeah, it cracked me up so much, because it's, while him, like, trying to get involved in all of the trouble, it seemed like such a departure for him. I could also see how as a teenager, he could go from being that guy that wants to be involved all the time to being this straight-laced principal who wants to squash all the good times because nobody ever let him join. Like, I could totally see it. And Joyce's reactions to Snyder were pretty much my favorite. Like, just the eye rolling and the scooting away, and oh, I loved it.
Are you guys going steady?
Oh my god.
Yeah, and speaking of Joyce, we got to see a really different side of her this episode. She reminded me of some sort of groupie, and she was just, you know, always going along with whatever Giles wanted, and he seemed into her, though, so, like, that was kind of cool. But, Kristen, what did you think of Joyce this episode?
I think we all wanted to be Joyce in this episode, so while we all may hate Joyce on some occasions, I don't hate Joyce, but man, we all kind of wanted to be her this time, and she was, you know, it didn't surprise me that she was kind of the way she was, that she, you know, fell under Giles's spell and just kind of followed him around, and, you know, it fit what I thought Joyce would be like as a teenager. She's kind of a little bit like Buffy, but not is as full-on, you know, Slayer as Buffy is. So it worked for me.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but I feel like she was a lot more easygoing as a teenager. Yes, she had, like, her selfish, this is what I want to do and I'm going to do it, which I think was put in there to make you see how she and Buffy are alike, because that kind of mirrored what Buffy was saying earlier, but a little more childlike. But I kind of liked her more as a teen. I don't know, just because some of the things that she says when she's an adult don't make a lot of sense to me or kind of make me do a double take. Whereas where she was a teen, it was kind of I don't know how to explain it. It's like a more uniform character. Like everything she said and everything she did made sense in who she was at that moment. So I enjoyed it.
And Caitlin, I want to get your take on her as a teenager, too, because in this episode, she tells Giles, I feel like I had this dream where I was a mother and I had a kid and a job and all of this and I was a grown up and now I feel like I'm waking up. And I wonder if that lends any credence to the people who are saying that Joyce is a terrible person and that, you know, she's not a good mother. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people have these kind of thoughts, probably, like, once they get more responsibility in their lives, that, you know, we all have these kind of ugly thoughts that we aren't proud of having. And I have a feeling that's probably something that, as life has gotten more difficult, especially since she's become a single mother, that she's probably had some of these ugly thoughts, like, my life has gotten so difficult and how is it possible that my life could be like this sort of thing. And these are thoughts we have, and then we kind of shove them away because they're not good thoughts, but when I felt like this, they often are what comes out, and it's not pleasant, but it's also not necessarily representative of who you are. To me, it kind of sounds like something also that someone who became a mother at a young age would say.
Yeah, I totally get that, and I think one of the greatest things that this show does is show the humanity of these characters. They're not perfect. You know, sometimes you are so proud of Buffy and what she's done, and the things that she does are so hard, and you're like, man, I you know, I really relate to her, I really understand that pain, and I sympathize with her. And then other times you're like, wow, she's being really bratty today. And, you know, she's just like, I can't stand her today. And I think that's normal. Like, sometimes even with friends, you know, one day you're like, man, this person's my best friend. And the other day you're like, you're just really annoying me right now and you need to, like, walk away. And that's life. And I think with Joyce in particular, because we're seeing the show from Buffy's point of view, we often see Joyce in a more negative light than a positive light. But it's important to remember that even if she does have these negative thoughts, you're right, Caitlin, like, it doesn't mean that's who she is. It just means she had that thought a few times and, you know, she probably does feel guilty about it and she moves on and she tries to be a better person like you would think all good people would want to do. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm still not a huge fan of Joyce, especially upon this rewatch. It's been very difficult to sympathize with her, but at the same time, she's in a difficult position, and I think it's important to keep in mind where she's coming from, not just where Buffy's coming from. But let's talk about the mayor now. Obviously, we see that he's up to no good, and he has that cabinet full of dark magic items and the demons that he prays to and presents sacrifices to. Newbies, I'm really curious. Do you have any idea what he could possibly be up to, what his long-term plan is, Danielle?
I was so taken aback by his cabinet of curiosities, I guess, that I have no idea what is going on. I thought at first that he had planted Principal Snyder in the school as a sort of protection against all of these things happening, but with Snyder being so anti-Buffy, and now with us seeing that the mayor is doing sacrifices and like weird things, that it totally just flips what I was thinking previously, and now I don't know where I stand.
And of course, we see one of his sacrifices is a bunch of babies to the snake demon monster. And Kristen, you were really upset about the babies.
I mean, they're babies. Like, I know it's a demon, but they're babies. I was so, as they were describing this big thing, you know, I forget what Ethan called it, and he kept referring to it as this thing, but he was like, you know, it's this big event or whatever, and he kept mentioning it and kept mentioning it, and I'm like, what could possibly be so big that they needed to turn all of the parents into teenagers in order to hide it? Like, I could not come up with anything that would be that big. And then we see them steal 4 babies from the hospital. And I'm like, I assumed there were going to be more baby thefts. And I was like, no, like, this is not okay. So when we got down to like the, you know, sewer area, whatever, and it was just the 4 of them, I was like, okay, I still don't see why you needed this giant diversion, but sure, okay, I get it. And I was very, very unhappy about the baby sacrifices. So they're babies. It's not okay.
Yeah, and honestly, I kind of forget how dark the show can get sometimes. I mean, it is funny and it's a little bit campy and you kind of just roll with it. But if you really think about it, you know, they're talking about sacrificing babies and it almost happens. And luckily they were saved and everything's fine. But yeah, it's always surprising to me that they kind of tend to go there every once in a while.
And that's got to be one evil demon to eat babies. Like, let's be real. Like, that's the worst of the worst. That's the low of the low. Like, you want to eat babies.
But speaking of being a little bit funny, too, like, the mayor gets down there and he's, you know, just waiting for this monster to show up to eat the babies. And he, like, calls up his assistant and is like, you know what? I'd like to report some issues with the sewer system. I think we should take care of that. And it's just like, what is he doing?
He like reports that, you know, there's some issues with gas lines and whatnot. And I'm like, wait, what? Yeah, he's weird. I don't know.
I just don't understand.
I'm sorry. Caitlin, do you want to weigh in at all?
No, no comment.
No comment. Yep.
That is fair enough. Okay, so last question for this episode. Obviously, Giles and Joyce got up to some stuff in this episode, and at the end it's kind of awkward, but I wanted to ask the newbies. Danielle, you can go first. Do you think Giles and Joyce could potentially end up in a real relationship?
That is a great question, because that's something that I've been thinking to myself. I could see it because they both care about Buffy. However, I'm not sure if I like adult Giles and adult Joyce together. I liked their teenage versions together, but I feel like when it comes to them being adults, they have very different views on how things work or how things should work that I'm not sure that they would mesh well. Like, just in the ways that they treat Buffy or the ways in which they see what she's doing. I don't know. It just, it doesn't fit for me.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that they will or won't. I don't know. That I can't answer.
Yeah. When this episode started and Buffy kind of played them off each other like you would real parents, I kind of giggled about it. And then you see Giles step out of the dark and he's there and they're wiser than her. I thought about it. Like, in that moment, I thought about what if, you know, he was a father figure? Like, what if, you know, him and Joyce decided to start dating? And I was like, how weird would that be? And honest to God, I think it would be a really interesting pairing just because they both care about Buffy. I think Joyce's parenting would be a little more consistent and a little less strange and weird and intense like she can be sometimes if she's got someone like Giles who understands everything that Buffy's going through standing beside her. Like, it just, you know, it's like Joyce would be able to mother Buffy through the normal teenage stuff while Giles deals with the Slayer teenage stuff, which is basically what's been going on now. But I could see it working if, you know, if she needed to understand Buffy better, and maybe Giles could help with that in addition to them, you know, being a couple and working. Like, I could see it.
Caitlin, do you have any non-spoilery thoughts you could share about this?
No comment.
Okay. All right. Well, that basically wraps it up, unless you guys have anything else you want to discuss from this episode.
More teenage Giles.
More Snyder.
Considering what we saw of teen Giles, though, are you going to be looking at adult Giles any differently now?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I think I will be looking at him in that I will be hoping that at some point his, like, teenage accent comes out, or he just decides to dress in, like, a white tank top at some point. Like, I will be looking at him to expect these things and then be disappointed.
Okay, let's jump into favorite scenes now. Mine was every time Giles was super excited when Buffy punched Ethan, because it was so cute and it was so, like, out of character for normal Giles, of course, but it's, you know, when he, like, jumps up and he's like, yes, after she actually does punch him, it was just, it was perfect.
That was almost hilarious. My favorite.
The little mini fist pump, like, yeah, it was so cute.
And he, like, jumped. It was so good.
Yes, that was my favorite part. Okay, Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Buffy walking up with Snyder in tow and seeing Giles and Joyce making out. Like, just that moment, it was so great. And she kind of walks past him and then stops and does the about face and, like, turns around. And then you get the whole interaction of, you know, Giles and Joyce, like, just wanting more chocolate. But that whole little thing was just great.
Yeah, I love when she actually does walk by them, and, like, she doesn't notice them at first, but then everything sort of catches up to her and she slows down and she's like, did I just see them doing that? Yes. Yes, I did. Okay. And Caitlin, I know that you said you basically just love Teen Snyder, but was there any moment in particular that you really loved above all others?
I loved every scene that he was in, especially, like, the first one when Buffy and Willow come upon him, and he, like, keeps leaving and then coming back, and then he'll go somewhere else, and then he would come back and, like, put his arms around their shoulders, and, I just loved everything about Teenage Snyder. He's so ridiculous.
And Danielle, what was your favorite scene?
Anytime Giles opened his mouth and that accent came out. Specifically, my favorite parts were when he was sort of being standoffish towards Joyce. Like, you know how, like, some guys do that cool guy thing where they pretend not to care, or they do short answers to the girl trying to be like, whatever. He had some of those moments, and those moments mixed with his, like, different accent were just pure gold for me.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I really noticed that, too. Like, guys do that. And look, fellas,
Don't do that to girls. It's not nice. Unless you're Giles with that accent, because it was really hot. But especially I noticed it at first when they were talking about the records, and Joyce was like, wow, you have a lot of really good records here. And he's like, yeah, they're all right. But it was just that accent. Like, you just can't help but be attracted to him.
Yeah, like he's being dismissive, but then the accent is so great when he's dismissive.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, that is true. All right, let's jump into favorite lines then. Mine was basically the same thing as my favorite scene, but I really liked when he starts off and he goes, he's lying, go on, hit him. And then Buffy just says, I don't think he is, and shut up. And then Giles goes, you're my slayer, go knock his teeth down his throat. And I love this because they clearly remember who they are as adults. Like, he knows that he's Buffy's watcher, and yet he's still a teenager and he can't help but being whiny about it. And like, Joyce does it too, and even Snyder to some extent. And it's that weird, like, juxtaposition of him trying to hold this over her head, but being super whiny about it, like a child having a temper tantrum, that just is really hilarious to me. But Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was from, like, right after the adults started to change into teenagers, and I think Willow or Buffy, someone says something like, oh, I think we might need a doctor or something, and then all of a sudden the doctor walks out on the stage at the Bronze, and Willow says, I think that is my doctor. He's usually less topless. I mean, the way Willow approaches the situation is just great in general, but that whole scene was just really funny. But good line.
Things you will never unsee.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And the karaoke was so bad. Oh my god, I know that song, and I was trying to, like, nod along with it, but it was so bad.
I don't know, I kind of liked it.
No, just bad.
Okay, and Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
Mine is continuing my love of Snyder, and it's when they get in the car and they, like, Buffy speeds off with her not good driving, and Snyder goes, whoa, Summers, you drive like a spaz!
And I don't know why, but I loved that it was, like, off camera. Like, he's already in the car and they are starting to drive away. So you don't see his face or anything, but he just goes, you drive like a spaz! And I don't know, it just makes it even funnier to me.
I love it. I love him so much in this episode.
And finally, Danielle, what was your favorite line?
Well, because this episode at first was dealing with the marching band, I could really relate. And so in talking about the plumes and, like, the hats that the marching band wears, Xander says, those tall, fuzzy hats ain't cheap, huh? And Oz goes, but they go with everything. And no, they're actually really expensive, but they are pretty awesome and can go with everything. You just have to try.
Oh, Oz, I love you.
So, I loved that exchange.
Oh, Oz. He's so great. All right, so that's it for the discussion of these two episodes. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find us on this post on hypeable.com or any of our other Buffy-centric posts, including the Season 2 quiz that we put up recently. Then you can also find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Please, if you like the podcast, consider leaving us a review on iTunes. And just remember, if you rate us 5 stars, then I will make you gooey chocolate cupcakes, and I will give you cash for even more cupcakes. Or brownies. I did promise to make someone on Twitter brownies the other day.
Yes, and she makes very good brownies. She baked me brownies the other day, so I highly recommend it. So all the 5-star reviews.
All right, we're going to get into our listener feedback right now. We've got a couple of them from Twitter, and this first one is from David at Rabid Reynard, who said, just finished Korra, hoping for Netflix series about earthbending Avatar. Not committed to Buffy, but hope you break after season 3. Well, that's okay if you're not here with us for Buffy. That's totally fine. It's not everybody's cup of tea. Really glad that you're watching Korra, though, and yeah. I'm kind of into this idea of an earthbending Avatar as a Netflix series. What about you, Caitlin?
Yes, please. Give me all the avatars.
Yeah, and I feel like Netflix could really do it justice. Their stuff is really high quality, and that would just be cool in general. Caitlin, would you like to get this next one?
Of course I would. Jewel says, Angel locked in chains and grunting like that equals Sarah Lance on Arrow when she was resurrected. And I was like, the way to my heart is to mention Angel and Sarah Lance in the same sentence. So all my love for this comment. And it's also true.
Oh, yes, definitely true. And Kristen, would you like to get this last one from Twitter?
Sure. Shauna Evans at NickLove128 says, Hubby and I have decided that we're watching Angel whether you do or not. Too much awesome for some of the characters. Yeah, we're still figuring out how that all is going to work, but I'll probably watch Angel even if we don't, just because I like to be in the know.
Yeah, we are still trying to figure out what we're going to do about the spinoff Angel, but hopefully we'll be discussing that with you guys very soon. We definitely want input from listeners, so keep an eye out, especially on Twitter. We'll be trying to get some feedback from you soon about that. And Danielle, would you like to get this first comment from a Hi People post?
Sure. So Matt Tadros said, I went to Universal Studios this past weekend, and on the studio tour, I got to see where they filmed the episode Hush, which is my absolute favorite episode of the entire series. Hashtag no comment. I don't know what this means,
Me neither.
I like that you're using the hashtag no comment. That makes me really happy. So.
Definitely have to no comment this one, I think, but very cool anyway.
I have appreciation for this, I'll just say that.
Yes, lots of appreciation. Okay, and our last comment from Hypeable is from Kat, who says, I'm going to be honest with you guys, I couldn't maintain only watching 2 episodes of Buffy a week anymore. This show is just too good. I'm now halfway through season 4 and halfway through the first season of Angel. I'm so excited to hear you guys discuss season 3. It really is a wonderful season. There are so many fantastic episodes to come. Yeah, I mean, even me, like, I've seen the series before, guys, and I'm even having trouble staying on task. And of course, I can, you know, skip ahead if I want to, but Kristen and I usually watch together, and so I just kind of stay on the schedule that the newbies are on. And it's really hard. Like, I just want to keep watching.
We do sometimes fancy bit when we're not on an episode, and then we get to watch 4 at once, and I get very excited. So I totally understand. Yeah, I wish I could just, like, mainline the rest of season 3 right now.
Yeah, and season 3 has some really good episodes in it. I mean, I blocked the TV from Kristen the other night.
Rude.
So that I could scroll through the upcoming episodes and see which ones were going to be mine and which ones are going to be Selena. It was like, oh man, she gets that one, but I get this one. And it was pretty funny. So I don't know. Look at the draw, I guess.
Or maybe someone will not be available and you'll have to step in.
Or maybe I will just bribe somebody.
You'll break brownies with a secret additive.
Yes, or... Well, I was going to say maybe I could send them to Selena, but she lives really far away, and that would be expensive. And I don't want to actually do her harm. I mean, I love Buffy, but I don't think it's worth it that much.
Send her some band candy.
Yes. Actually, I think I would want her to do the episode then if I sent her band candy, because that would be pretty funny. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in once again. We really, really appreciate it. Next week, we'll be discussing another 2 episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So hopefully we will talk to you again soon. But until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danielle.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.